If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Rob McCarron.
Hashtag authority. Hashtag Steph Bouncy. Hashtag SmackDown 15.
Jeff Hawkins.
You done digging that hole?
You're listening to Shake Them Ropes with Rob McCarron and Jeff Hawkins.
Dance on your grave, dirt sheet writer.
Hey, kids, do you like pro wrestling? Well, we like pro wrestling, too. This week in the news, RIP to Mo from Men on a Mission. In the lazy river of wrestling criticism, everybody had a good week. Looking forward to talking about it. An Invader Club from Clash 9 New York Knockout, Terry Funk versus Ric Flair in an I Quit match. I am Jeff Hawkins. Joining me this week, because of Voices of Wrestling's very generous PTO policy where I can hire somebody and they can go on a week on a vacation a week later, Rob is in Cabo. My partner from the Dynamite show, Paul Fontaine. How do you do, Paul?
How much are you getting paid for this?
Exactly nothing, and they like it.
That was my whatchamacallit, Will Smith's kids in Russia.
Yes. Yeah. If you ever wonder why I tend to kind of give short shrift to Dynamite on this show, it's because Paul and I thoroughly talk about it Wednesday evenings on the Fight Game Media Network. We're going to have to rehash a couple of those points because it was a good week for AEW and they deserve it. A lot of people think this is an anti-AEW show, and it totally is not. It's just, I've already talked about it once this week. I don't need to talk about it again. I am also on day two now of yesterday. I got my flu vaccine with the COVID vaccine, and also in the other arm, my pneumonia vaccine. So this is why I have the skull cap, both arms very sore. I'm going to try and plug through that.
I had the double shot last month, and it was about a day and a half. I was, it's not fun. It was COVID and flu.
Yeah. And speaking of COVID, rest in peace to Mo from Men on a Mission. Long COVID.
Yeah.
Complications from that. It's odd. Kind of looking back on a time period I lived through when I wasn't, I mean, I was a fan, but I wasn't Die Hard in college because I had college stuff to do. But I was also part of Rec Sport Pro Wrestling at this time, and man, did they trash Men on a Mission. And for what WWF wanted at the time, I thought they were perfectly fine. I mean, they you know, WWF didn't want, I mean, it was the age of work rate in a way, because Benoit and Malenko and ECW and all these other, you know, and Japanese wrestling was kind of hot at the time as well, with the Super Juniors especially. And so you get Men on a Mission, which is, you know, they plod. I think that's the best way I could put it. They plod. It's the land of giants, and that's what WWF wanted. But they weren't bad workers. They just weren't, you know, 4- and 5-star match workers necessarily. They were spectacle workers, and I thought they were perfectly cromulent.
I agree. Like, I you know, at the time, I didn't even really like. I watched WCW and WWF at the time. I didn't really have access to Japan. I didn't really know about it. I didn't do tape trading. I think ECW was just starting to become known, so it was like this thing I knew was out there and I wanted to see. But it's not like these guys were any worse than the guys in ECW. They just had, you know, the ECW had more contemporary gimmicks. That's all.
Oh, I'd push back against that, because early ECW, when it's in this period against Men on a Mission, far and away better. Just it wasn't. I mean, we hadn't gotten to the rating yet of ECW.
No, but I'm just saying, like, the guys in ECW, like, they, a lot of them weren't great workers. They
some
just,
of them, yeah, the yeah, ones that were just, home, like Sandman, yeah, being a surfer before he became, yeah, the Sandman type of a thing.
Yeah, Dreamer, and, you know, but the Public Enemy, like, their gimmicks work, okay, for them. So you know, you're in a time period of that. I mean, Mo himself was, you know, he was a perfectly fine second guy in a tag team, you know, that would go in and do most of the work, and then maybe would come in and he would, you know, he would get the pin usually with the big splash or whatever. And it was fine. It worked for that squash TV format that, mm-hmm, WWF did. And then you build them up to lose to a bigger team, like the, you know, like the Natural Disasters, or, you know, I can't even remember who else was the big teams back then. Heavenly Bodies, you know, Heavenly Bodies would probably lose to them, but, you know, it's like, yeah, but it's, you know, and I remember my buddy and I used to get together and watch the pay-per-views. And I distinctly remember when Mabel got elevated to the point where he was headlining a pay-per-view, and we were like, you know what, if we'll pay for this, we'll pay for anything. And like that, even we recognize that, and we did, and we happily gave them our money.
There are two things that were cringe about this story. Number one, just WWF was such a white company. I mean, bringing in Men on a Mission felt like pandering a bit, almost to the PN News.
Hey, at least WCW, they didn't hire an Italian guy to play a black rapper.
That's true. But the worst part was, like, even like Figure Four, God bless him, but they go RIP to Sir Mo. I was like, come on.
Oh,
man.
No.
We're gonna remember Mo like that, and not as, you know, an equal partner. We're going to remember him as the, you know, one of the, basically the red shirt for King Mabel, one of the worst runs by any WWF superstar. Man, I mean.
I mean, if you look at the time period, though, like, yeah, I mean, WCW had PN News and Van Hammer out there, like,
oh,
it's
God,
just, it's just what you had, like, and Men on a Mission were, they weren't out of place, we'll just say that, you know,
right, they're in that 93 to 95 just, yeah, cesspool where wrestling kind of sucked in the big two, so, yeah, everybody was looking for Smoky Mountain and ECW or New Japan and or All Japan if you could get it. I mean, it was just dreadful. Like, what the new generation?
Yeah, like, but as a fan, like, I still consumed it and I still enjoyed it.
Oh yeah,
because it was I had.
Yeah, I consumed it because I liked wrestling, and that's how I, you know, even in college, that's how I would connect with people at times. You watch wrestling? Yeah. Oh yeah, sure. You know, whatever. New data from WrestleNomics confirms that WWE ticket prices have nearly doubled since the TKO merger. You wanted to talk a bit about this. Go for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because, you know, and I'm on the message boards and everything, and there's this narrative out there right now that, you know, because they'll look at a couple of WWE ticket sales, and inevitably these will be ones that are like 2 or 3 weeks in the future, and it'll be like, oh, you know, Raw in Des Moines has a, you know, a house of 4,485, and the last time they were there they did 8,000, and you know, they're clearly on the downswing. And then, you know, but those same people don't go back and look and see what was the actual gate on the day of the show. And then the other thing is, you know, and people are just kind of accepting this as fact. Oh, you know, the ticket sales are down now. And well, what's the reason? Well, maybe it's because ticket prices are up. Maybe it's because they're not hot, you know, whatever. But Brandon Thurston did an analysis and it's like, nope, their ticket sales are at best even. And you could even say they're up over last year. And the ticket prices are way up. So when you even compare the last quarter, so quarter two, I think, ending in July or June, the average ticket sales in that quarter were exactly even, like within like three tickets on per average event from the quarter, same quarter in 2024. And the average ticket price went from, I want to say like, it went up like $40, you know, from like $83 to like $123 or something like that. Like it was just, I'll find the numbers, but it's just like insane how much they're charging.
They're exorbitant. Even to yeah. me, and I'm like, I would, you know, I would go travel to Mania occasionally, and I won't do it anymore because it's just too
here,
expensive.
I've got Thurston's article here. So in the quarter, they went from my numbers were a little off. So they went from, but not actually 10,847 tickets, and this is for Raw and SmackDown. So all the Raw and SmackDowns from June to September. So okay. It's quarter three.
Right.
June to September, 10,847 this year, 10,849 last year. So it's basically
even. It's down. Oh, yeah, this guy's
down
falling.
Two tickets. But the average ticket price went from 75 to 118. That's over 50% increase. And people are still buying them.
Yep.
They're not cold. I'm sorry.
No.
As much as you, most of the people listening to this probably want them to be, or maybe most people that listen to this network will say,
yes,
want them to be. They're not cold. They're not going to be cold. WrestleMania next year is going to set records because they're going to Saudi the following year.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like people are mad about Saudi, and yet WWE.
And so they're moving
money.
Up their travel schedule to go, hey, let's just go to Mania instead because.
And they're
going to
jack those tickets. Like, you're not getting in. You're not getting into Allegiant for less than a grand.
Like, and there's other things happening in Vegas that week, right?
Like,
is it the TV convention that they're doing?
Yeah.
Same time? Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want to go to Vegas, maybe you can get a ticket to NXT.
maybe
like 9 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, you know, 3 hours after the Hall of Fame ceremony.
Those shows are hard to go to, man. I did the one in LA and I was just like, ugh.
I went to the one in Dallas. Dallas, that was 11. It wasn't too bad. But
was it?
Yeah.
Dallas or is this the first one? Yeah,
2022. No, the first one was like primetime on a Friday. It was great.
One I went to. Okay.
Yeah, we were there. We sat next to each other.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was misremembering. I was
Sweet. You remember
yes.
God.
I was misremembering with New Orleans for some reason. I'm like, you could never do a morning show for NXT in New Orleans. No. That would be just dead.
It would be like one, but that might as well be morning in New Orleans.
I had a point. I couldn't think of it right now. Sorry. Oh, I know what it was. No, AEW, in contrast, they dumped their ticket strategy a while ago. But I would wonder if they brought it back, how it would work. Because I think Dave convinced Tony Khan about the whole UFC thinking, where it's if you reduce the price, people won't value it as much type thing. Mm-hmm. I think it could be effective counter programming to at least get people in the building.
I thought they had done that. I could be
they
wrong.
They
didn't know
it was originally. That's what they.
No, no. I thought they went back to it. But
okay.
I haven't checked
prices to be honest with you in a long time.
It could all be that, you know, like by the time you get to the show, like you'll notice that AEW the week of a show, like you'll look, and I did this like the Wrestle Dream. I looked about a week out. And because we check this on when we do the Dynamite show, And a week out, they were at like about 4,000. And right. then by the time the show happened, I think they got to like 6,700. So, I mean, they sold a ton of tickets. Well, they distributed a ton of tickets in the last week. And so I think it's a combination of comps and really cheap tickets. And that's fine. Like, I don't care. Like, you know, get them in the building.
I just want a full building. That's all I want.
Exactly. If they're all free, if you pay them, that's fine too. Just get them in the building. And
as I recall, like the Kia Forum had overpriced tickets to me in terms mm-hmm. of juice being worth the squeeze. So it might just depend on the venue that they're renting.
But didn't they sold well there too, didn't they?
They sold well there the first time, the one where MJF cussed out the executives.
Called Tony a fucking mark.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The second time they sold well, but I don't think it was great. I think it wasn't a sellout. I don't think.
In hindsight, I won't even say hindsight because we said it the day of the show. That might not have been a great idea. What they did. Yeah.
I wonder sometimes. Like the last time they were in the area, they were in Ontario, which
yeah
is a more suburban. It's a bit more of a hike for people who actually live in Los Angeles, to be honest with you. It's about a 90-minute drive from the valley.
Well, that was a Bucks Vanity ploy. That was a Vanity ploy, too. Dynamite 300, right?
Yeah, Rancho Cucamonga is kind of close to Ontario, kind of.
And they did Collision 100, the same.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Venue. They did the double taping. That's why. Okay, that's probably why they got as many tickets.
Yeah.
Of note to me, Samantha Irvin revealed this week that she has a 2-year non-compete, non-pay in her WWE contract, and she's gotten through year one and has one more year to go.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I have to tell the kids. If you're ever going to sign a big contract with TKO or the WWE, have a lawyer read it, let him know what it says, and let him know or let him know what you're agreeing to, or you let him tell you what you're agreeing to. There is no way on God's earth anybody should sign a 2-year non-compete. I'm in software. I have a 60-day non-compete if I quit my job or if I get fired. But that's software, and that's, you know, that's even more cutthroat than I think sports entertainment. What value? They just did this to be jerks, and I think she was probably dating Ricochet at the time, and they kind of knew that he'd probably be on the way out.
Well,
I think they just did this out of spite, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, Renee Paquette had the same thing, you'll recall.
She had 1 year.
I thought it was two.
Really? I thought it was one.
I thought it was two. It could have been one. But either way, it's long and non-paid. Now, the thing is she quit. So if they would have fired her, she would have had a 90-day no-compete. She could have stayed working there, kept doing the ring announcing, and gotten paid for the full 2 years. She could have done that. She wanted to get out bad enough that she was willing to leave and not get paid. You or I, if we had been dumb enough to sign a 2-year no-compete, we would have just kept plodding away, putting in the minimum effort,
quit. That's what we would got paid and quiet quit, because I hear all these people and they're like, you know what, they should go in and fight it, you know, because Brock Lesnar and his high powered attorneys got a deal on his. But because Brock Lesnar was paying those guys at least $2,500 an hour to work on. You know, those are the types of guys that you pay. Because when they come in, they know they're going to get a deal. Most judges are going to look at these things and go, did you sign this deal? Yes. Did you read this deal? Yes. Did you know what was in the deal when you signed it? Yes. Case dismissed.
Well, and the difference there is 10 years, first of all. And number two, they said, I mean, they said worldwide and not just wrestling, but MMA or
combat
any form
sports.
Of sports or entertainment. I think he was even entertainment. I think he couldn't even have gone and done an acting job. Like he was, you know, if you want to, you know, you're going to have to go farm if you want to make money. Like, you know, that's basically what your options are. So yeah, that was ridiculous. And no one was ever going to live up to it. And I'm sure when they signed it and when he signed it, they both probably thought, yeah, he's going to be here the whole 10 years. He's going to be a multi-time world champion and everyone's going to be happy. They probably figured they're going to rip up the contract in 5 years and renew it. Like, and same thing with Samantha. Like, I think Samantha probably got a really good salary and was pretty
especially
happy
for what she does. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the time she signed, she was probably really happy with it and figured, yeah, you know, 2 year no compete, that's fine. And then she got unhappy when her husband left and when she, you know, she wanted to do more things and they didn't want her to. And, you know, and I'm sure in 1 year's time, she's going to be the new ring announcer on Dynamite and Justin Roberts is going to be looking for work. That's my guess.
No, I think Justin will get demoted possibly to collision duty and Arda or Katie will be,
okay.
The door, possibly.
Could be.
As the new Dasha. I try to imagine the chutzpah of telling an attorney, you know, tell me he can't work anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And trying to, and thinking that, and as an attorney, sitting there and going, there's no way any court in America can enforce that. And then still putting it in the contract.
Yeah, well. I mean, to be honest though, like she didn't seem upset about it. Like she's, you know, like it wasn't,
I wasn't thinking her. I was thinking,
Brock. Oh, you're thinking Brock. Yeah.
But her. Yeah. I mean, at the time she probably thought she was a lifer. I mean, I can't blame her necessarily either.
But imagine how badly she wanted to get out that she was willing to give up 2 years of salary, in order to get out of her contract.
I'm trying to, and I'm thinking, how bad could it have been unless they were really screwing with her after Ricochet left?
Or she just wasn't happy being a ring announcer, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, that could be, that could be, too. It's like, well, I really want to do more and do my music. And
so actually for me, no, she's not going to be ring announcing a Dynamite. She's going to be managing Ricochet, probably.
That's possible. She's the new Brandy. That's just what we need.
Yeah.
And you wanted to talk about TNA being dark.
Yeah, so Mike Gilbert, you know, who has a show on this network, him and JD, right?
He used to have a show on our other network, too, and then he came over here, that two-timing hussy. Yeah, go ahead.
So he reported first, I believe, and by reported, I mean he looked at the schedule and figured it out, but hey, he's the first one.
Yes, noticing that, is a good thing for a reporter, so won't call him a reporter, but Mike follows TNA more intently than anybody I've ever met, so yeah.
Or he follows people that do and takes credit for what they figured out. No, I'm just kidding, Mike.
Okay, but, he's not listening. Go ahead.
No. So anyways, what he discovered was that, they do not have any events scheduled until, like, so Bound for Glory was, like, 2 weeks ago, I think? Bound for Glory 2025 was...
A week ago Friday,
October
Friday. 12th.
So,
2 weeks.
October 12th. So the previous taping they had done before that was, I believe, a week and a half before Bound for Glory. And they taped through the week after Bound for Glory. Or no, they taped through Bound for Glory, and that was it. So essentially, there's nothing taped. I think they have like four matches that they taped that were like dark. But they've got like three more weeks of TV until their next TV taping, which is November 13th, I want to say. It's like the second week in November at some point. So basically, they went dark. And this is after their biggest show of the year, their biggest U.S. show of all time, according to them. You know, they seem fairly hot, you know, with this NXT partnership and everything. So the idea is that the NXT wrestler or the TNA wrestlers were given the option of going to NXT. So that's why you've been seeing more NXT or TNA people on NXT, like Leon Slater, Matt Cardona, you know, there's been a few others. And then the rest of them are just, you know, they're just off until the next TV taping. They've got a few shows before the end of the year, but they always take a couple weeks off. It's weird that they do. But it's usually around Thanksgiving. And this time it's like a whole month right after the biggest pay-per-view of the year. It's just kind of odd.
Do they have a TV deal that's still intact?
Well, I mean, the TV deal they have is with the TV station that they own. So,
right.
They're still airing shows. Like last week they aired something called After the Glory, and it was basically a combination of clips from the pay-per-view and interviews and, you know, like video packages and whatnot, behind the scenes stuff. So I didn't watch it, but you know, people that did watch it seemed to like it. I don't know what they're airing this week. It's, you know, we're 2 hours from when the next episode is going to air. I talked to somebody that works there, and they said, we're not going dark. And then, well, the first week they were, so I don't know what we're getting this week, but it feels like.
I wonder if this is because of Thursday night football in the States being hot right now. And then like later in the winter when the season kind of evens out.
Yeah, but their audience is so small, I don't think.
Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, they've been on Thursday forever. I think it's just poor time management. Like there was like they did have a Santana and Moose match. Or it was Moose and Ridge Holland that they can't air because Ridge broke his leg.
Right.
So that would have been like probably the main event of one of their shows. They can't air that, but I mean that shouldn't affect like 3 weeks of TV.
Can I be the person to say that taping 3 weeks of television is a good thing because you get more continuity in these things?
Oh, absolutely. NXT was so good when they did that.
Yes, I'm a person who's like, tape more. I get the live aspect of it, but it's like, especially on AEW in some aspects, like Raw will throw you a curveball here and there. But the live aspect of the show does nothing if there's nothing unexpected on it. Like Saturday Night Live, there's no danger to the live because you have cue cards and everything, and you'll occasionally get something on there. But it's like one of those things where I was just like, for years, I was like, Saturday Night Live needs to stop being live and just tape sketches, and it'll be much better. But
and their taped sketches are usually the better ones. Like
yes, because it's gone through a process. It's okay. This joke's working. This joke's not. Let's reshoot this. I like more quality control in my wrestling, please.
A couple weeks ago, NXT had a taped show, and it was so funny because I watched it and I didn't realize it was taped, and then I listened to three different recaps of it, and not a single person recapping it knew it was taped. But they were asking questions. Well, why didn't they talk about what happened at Bound for Glory? And then it was like, oh, it was taped before Bound for Glory. And nobody knew. Like, that's the thing that you couldn't tell because, like, it wasn't publicized. There was no spot. When Collision's taped, because, you know, everything revolves around Wrestling Observer and, you know, they're giving out results, you know, on the recap of Dynamite.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's I guess hopefully TNA will be back in like 2 weeks and we'll see what happens. I thought they might tape some shows at the PC or some matches. So, you know, maybe I'll tune in tonight and we'll see like a bunch of matches from the PC that I didn't even know had been taped.
If Dynamite ever taped, they'd still have a 17-minute overrun. So
oh, yeah. Yeah. Or at least 10.
Yeah. Good Lord. That'll do it for the news. Now to the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched,
somewhere
whatever we had
down
time
the
for.
Lazy river.
starting with ice cold takes on Wrestle Dream, most of which we got out last night, but we'll repeat a couple of them. Overall, a very solid show, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'll bring up my 2 points I brought up last night. The tag team match in progress to open the show. I was thumbs down for this. I think it's a lame gimmick. I like a pay-per-view being one presentation. I don't like pre-show matches to begin with because if they're not important enough to be on the main show, you shouldn't be seeing them. The fireworks as the match is going on. I didn't want to get into the online debate. I did look cheap or low rent. It just looked out of place for me. You know, like they were timed to go off, but the match is still on there. And so it looked almost like a mistake to me.
Well, did you hear all the like thunder that was going on like in the first part of the match at the end of Collision? Like, and somebody said it was the weather from outside, but
really?
it sounded, you know, because AEW is not exactly, doesn't have a great history with production. So I thought it was them and it was like super loud. It was just like random. And I thought they were giving them like time cues, like get out of here. We're going on the pay-per-view soon. But I've never heard of weather from the outside causing sound issues on a show, other than like Beware of Dog.
I mean, that has to be. I mean, do they have a mic in the ceiling? That has to be some loud thunder.
I don't know, but it was loud. Like, because you didn't watch Collision, did you?
I watched it.
Oh, and you didn't notice the sound?
Well, my sound's already bad to begin with.
Oh, okay.
Depending on how I'm watching it.
4 or 5 times in the last like 3 minutes, like that first part that aired on Collision, and then I think it happened once on the pay-per-view portion. But actually, that might have been the fireworks that you're talking about.
Were you a fan of this gimmick or not? I can't remember.
We talked about it. I mean, I understand the reasoning for it, but I think all you did was you managed to piss off two different groups of people.
Yes.
You pissed off the people that watched Collision that weren't going to buy the pay-per-view and wanted to see the end of that match. And you pissed off people that did buy the pay-per-view but were pissed off they didn't get to see the beginning of the match because they didn't want – they already giving AEW 4.5 hours of your time. They don't want to spend another hour watching Collision. There's very few sickos out there that probably watched the whole 5.5 hours. Me being one of them.
I was too, admittedly.
Yeah. But I think for all the people that weren't, and probably more weren't are than aren't, you know, that aren't sickos, those people you pissed off. And they may not give you that extra hour next time, you know, because you know they're pissed off.
After last time's was it tailgate brawl with the women? That just was so disappointing. I said, I'm not watching the pre-show next time, but I ended up watching it anyways. But I generally don't want to spend that extra hour. I want to come in, watch the event as the event, and then leave, quite frankly. Yeah. And then if I like it, it'll go into my comfort rotation. I don't want just like one match. I like events as events. Mm-hmm. And my other point, which we'll bring up when we get to Vader Club as well, but in the I Quit match, I thought the microphone gimmick should be necessary. And I think in order for a bigger visceral reaction from the crowd, you need to hear the words I quit over the sound system in the arena to give the crowd that release. Because that was the entire build was, you'll never get me to say I quit. Not that I might tap out to quit. And yeah, I'm sure he said it in the ring and I couldn't necessarily hear it necessarily, but you want that finality in there of the I quit, one person quit, we know it's clear, or at least, you know, in the case of the Blanchard Magnum one where it's like, yes, and it's like they ring the thing and he goes, well, I never said I quit, and it follows him around for his entire career. Now this one's just kind of get, I don't know. After Dynamite, I think they kind of put it in the waste bin, although there's a build there.
Well, and actually, you brought up, you kind of getting to something that I didn't bring up last night because I didn't think about it, but I was thinking about it today, especially watching that Flair Funk match. And I think the deal is, and first of all, I agree with your point, and it's specifically, it's not about the TV viewer, it's about the people in the building. And it, by respect, it's also the TV viewer hearing that reaction from the people in the building. But when the people in the building don't hear the I quit, then they don't react the same way because they're waiting for that to hear those words. That's what you paid for. It's the main event. It's the main selling point of the show. One of these guys is going to say I quit. And the people that paid money to go to this show didn't actually get to hear that. So that's part of it. But that brings me to a bigger point that you just touched on.
Okay.
And the thing is, the I Quit match, traditionally, and this is how we grew up, and we're traditionalists. We've been watching wrestling our whole lives. The I Quit match is the end. It's what you build to. And after Dynamite, this was just another chapter in the story. And it's like we might be in the middle. And that's why this didn't work. Because it should have been the end. It should have been, he says, I quit, and then he's humiliated, and we don't see him again. Or, you know, or he gets beat down by his team, or he quits and leaves.
Right.
Something has to happen as a result of him saying, I quit. And it can't just be, oh, I get up, and we're right back at it. And that's what he said in his promo.
Yeah, there has to be some resonance to the I quit. There has to be that, you know, psychic break in him that, oh, I just did the worst thing imaginable. Like in the Flair Funk match, you know, Flair cuts that promo right before, could you, the most humiliating thing possible is to say that I, you know, the most unmanly thing you could do. And that, that was also part of the Magnum Tully build was, you know, can you imagine how humiliating it must be that you got to look the other guy in the eye and go, yes, you're a better man than me type of a thing. And then and Moxley, another day I wake up and I get the
Darby's like, I'm not an idiot. I know the Death Riders are still there and are still going to be running rampant. It's like, then what did we just have this match for? And but now it became a peer. I think this is all part of the build to Blood and Guts. I actually think we're getting a men's Blood and Guts match.
Like, I do too. And I think I think they're going to put Moxley in that Zabisco role.
Yeah.
From 92, where his team can't trust him to win the big one type of a thing. Like they're recycling angles, but they're not giving as much credence to him. And just
and
a
they
point
don't understand why they worked.
Yes. And this is the other thing. I mean, this is my problem with the Fletcher Ospreay cage match too. It's like, that's supposed to be finality there. You know, that kind of like the big gimmick match, the I quits, the dog collars, the cage matches, all lights these types out. Of matches, lights out. They're not supposed to be means to an end. They're supposed to be the end. Right. And then you go on to something else. But the result of that should be what affects them into going into something else.
Correct. Yeah. And so I guess I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but we'll talk about it too. But
go ahead.
Like at the end of that match, I mean, you know, you had essentially a Terry Funk babyface churn. You had a new challenge. You had two new challengers emerge for Ric Flair. You had a new faction form. It was like, yeah, we saw the end of Flair Funk and we saw the beginning of something else. And now all this was, well, the match is over and now we're going to do another match. Like, it's like,
yeah, okay. I'm oh,
and I liked the show last night.
Oh yeah, I did too.
When you think about it, it's like, well, kind of renders that pay-per-view that we just watched meaningless.
They and retconned the funny thing almost everything in that pay-per-view. It was so weird. Yeah. Like Briscoe and Fletcher. You know, we had that thumbtacks and whatever match a while ago, but you know what? I'm back.
Let's do
give
it again.
Give me another shot.
Joe and Hangman. Joe cut a promo to build to the match he just had.
Yes.
You know, and so we'll do that one again. You know, Mercedes is doing a match for the TBS title. We just saw that 2 months ago, too.
It's almost like they're admitting, yeah, it was a B pay-per-view. It was in a low point during football season.
Yeah,
let's do it again when people are actually playing
full gear. Let's do it again. Give us your money again. But this will be a bigger show because we're in New Jersey and more people will come and Big Boom AJ will be there.
We'll have MJF on this one. Yeah.
Maybe.
So last Friday.
Yeah.
Ilya Dragunov returned.
Oh, my God. Did he return?
And with terrible new tattoos, but that match versus Sammy's
25 pounds of muscle.
25 pounds of muscle and just still, I mean, I wrote this down when I watched it, and this is before the pay-per-view, but Ilya Dragunov is their version of Darby Allin, but an actual wrestler as opposed to a stunt guy. And what I mean by that is he is a guy that puts everything into his match. I'm not saying it's like Darby could use the gym a little bit. Don't get me wrong. It's one of those things, but Ilya Dragunov just goes all in every match. And it's so, like, I didn't expect myself to get emotional watching a Sami Zayn, Ilya Dragunov return, because I thought Sami Zayn was going to retain. And then they figure out what to do with Ilya afterwards. But here we are. And my God, it was magical. I said, hose me at least once during that match, because Ilya just hits hard. He bleeds a little bit in almost every match from somewhere, which makes it even more endearing to me. I do hate the ink, though. And it's supposed to be part of a larger tattoo, and it's going to get much worse, and he's going to regret it when he's 40. But yeah, your thoughts on it.
When Solo came out, it's like, okay, I know, we're either not getting a finish or, that's how Sammy's going to win. And he didn't. And I was like, we actually got a clean finish. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I was amazed. The thing that they have in common, the commonality between Dragunov and Darby, is that they both use their body as a weapon.
Yes.
And that's, yeah. And that's where it is. Like they, when they throw something, when Darby does that dive, I mean, he weighs 1.5 pounds, but he like, it hurts probably more than like a 300 when Brody does it, like because of the force that he does and the speed. And Dragunov is the same way. And Dragunov now is probably closer. Well, he's not closer to Brody, but he's well over 200, I think. But he still has that same ferocity. And like, he's probably gonna end up hurting himself again, because I don't think he can go at that speed the way he did on Friday. But I'm hoping that he picks up the mantle from Sammy and keeps up this open challenge, because to me, that is a reason to tune into SmackDown every Friday. If you know you're going to see a Sammy or an Ilya Dragunov title defense, yeah, sign me up. I'm there. Like, that's,
I think it's going to eventually lead to a Carmelo title match. I think that's where they're going with that for the rematch. Okay. They worked so well together.
They
did.
You
know, in NXT, you can't deny him that. Wherever you would like to go, sir.
With the Lazy River?
Yeah. Raw.
Yeah. NXT. Well, Best of the Super Juniors started today. Watch that. Not much
no,
to say.
No, that's fine. That's
no,
cool.
No, but I will say the opener is kind of cool, because I don't always watch the non-tournament matches, but the opener was Shingo Takagi and Yota Tsuji on one side against Hiroshi Tanahashi and Zane J. And I was like, oh, Zane J is a American guy that was in the Inoki Dojo, and then he went over there and he's a young boy. And him getting to tag with Tanahashi against Shingo Takagi and Yota Tsuji, that's really cool for him. So, and they had a good match. It was Zane J got a lot. He obviously took the fall by submission, but they went over 10 minutes and it was a good match. So we had that. I did see a match on Sunday on another New Japan show, and it was these two women. I should look it up. But it's it was on the they did a show from the Kenta's home promotion, the gym that they normally run. And it was for the what was the date on Sunday? Oh, here we go. No Japan Road in Ishikari. So the match was for the JTO girls tag team title. It was Rhythm and Tomoka Inaba, and they're the champions, and they defended their titles against AOI. I don't know how that's pronounced. And Azusa Inaba. And I believe Tomoka and Azusa are sisters, but they are on opposite teams. And I'm told by someone that watches a lot of Stardom that they are two of the best women's wrestlers in the world, and they were on opposite teams. One of them is only 17 and the other one's 23. And this match was phenomenal. And I made the comment when I saw it, if there's any match in the AEW women's tag team tournament that's any better than this, I'll be thrilled. So, I wanted to bring that up. So,
I would have liked a Stardom team in that tournament. I brought this up last.
I would have liked
these
two sisters in the tournament, honestly.
Yeah, this would have been a good chance to like add a round and really kind of put the emphasis on some women's wrestling, as opposed to the same eight people that we see week after week after week type of a thing, or eight teams. Now that I think about it,
I saw some discussion today about this tournament and how they're going to get it wrapped up by Full Gear, and how it works if Mercedes and Athena are in the finals, as a lot of people expect, but Mercedes is also defending her title, or she's not defending. Well, I don't even know if she's defending or not, but she's definitely challenging for Chris Statlander's title.
Oh, that's right.
At Full Gear. But I think, so we have the tournament starts next week. The following week, they could do the semifinals. And then the week after that is Blood and Guts. But then the week after that is the go-home show for the pay-per-view. So you could do the finals on that show. And if Tony and Mina win, then they can just defend those titles on the pay-per-view, and Mercedes can do her thing. And I think where this Billy and or this Athena and Mercedes thing is going, they're doing some stuff on social media where Billy Starks is upset that Athena didn't ask her. So I feel like we're getting at Final Battle for the third year in a row, Athena and Billy Starks. I mark it down, Jeff. Paul Fontaine reporting.
Yeah, I'll be skipping Final Battle again, it looks like.
It's a good match.
I'm just move on from this Minion story if we're moving
on. Well, the stupid thing is every year, Billy's gonna win for sure. Billy's gonna win for sure.
And yeah, and then they keep on blue balling you and saying no. Yeah. I am going to give it up for promos this week. The Joe promo was great. Sneaky good this week. I loved the Becky Lynch on Paul Heyman promo.
I thought it
was really, really strong. And then you get to NXT. And my note on this was they were just doing the WWE style exposition promos and somebody needs to feel something. And this week, Tatum Paxley, and God bless him, Ricky, I still call him Starks, but it's Ricky Saints.
Yeah.
Came with the thunder. This was NWA power, Ricky, where he was in the studio and he looked like Mini the Rock / Ric Flair combined on the stick and in the way he presented himself. I watched this. I went, there you go. That's what you need, because he gets into the ring with these giants and he looks not frail, but it's kind of like when you saw Adam Cole for the first time in the ring with MJF and you noticed the size discrepancy and you didn't think of it when he was in NXT. And now you look at him and you go, oh my God, that's kind of how I look at Ricky Saints. I want to call him Stark.
I know.
But you watch Trick, and Trick has his character. He has it centered. He knows what he is. He's talking. And you go, all right, Saints is going to come in with the I am inevitable or whatever thing. Or I am, what's his nickname?
Absolute.
He's just going to hit Absolute a few times. But then he gets this fire in him. And it's almost, it's the same as almost the switch that was put on Adam Page when you call him a fraud.
Yeah.
And he finally clicks and he goes, I am smoother. I am tougher. When he says smoother like that, it's like, there you go. That's what you want. You want to kind of play into, for lack of a better term, I've always called his character kind of a feat, a little feminine in some ways because he likes to be fancy, almost like he's not quite a dandy, but he's close. But he also has that underlying toughness that doesn't make him a dandy. He's a little bit like the, I forget who did it in the original, but Ben Foster in 310 to Yuma character.
Okay.
Where he's dressed in like pink and, you know, you think, oh, look at him. He's a wuss. And then he's just the most vicious gunfighter you've ever seen.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
But just when he was on the mic, there's no height difference. There's no width difference.
No.
You just think
and Trick looked like, it's funny, Trick looked like he didn't know what hit him. Like he had this look on his face like, oh shit, where'd that come from?
Yeah.
Like,
and for Tatum needed this because the character is so, and this is going to be such a bad adjective, charactery. Like, they are into the mythos of this I play with dolls character to the point where you can't take it seriously. And then she comes out with this. And I think JC is the perfect foil for this in some ways, because people don't give JC enough credit for being an effective heel because they see her as a honky-tonk man champion. They see her as not a not worthy champion, and she's very worthy. This new version of Fatal Influence is quite good, I think, in terms of the roster that she has behind her. And hopefully they rebrand her as a unit. But I absolutely loved the Tatum Paxley promo.
They're like two sides of the same coin. They're like two sides of the same coin. Like, she's the babyface version of the character that Tatum is now playing. or she's a heel version of the character that Tatum is now playing. So,
right.
Yeah, it worked for that reason. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, Jack Perry also had a good promo.
Jack Perry had a Jack Perry had that phenomenal promo. I thought, I mean, that's possibly the best one he's had in AEW. I was thinking about it last night.
There was one that he had that was like half good. Like where it was like
one about his father. It was one that where he brought up his father and you were kind of like, oh, okay, how's he going to do this? And then he kind of turned it around and got it here. But I mean, since actually becoming a character, like post it wasn't the goat. That's what I called it last night. What was it called?
The scapegoat.
Scapegoat. That's what it was.
Yeah. It's the best thing he's done since. It's the best thing he's done since since the whole punk thing.
Yeah, since he changed from Jungle Boy, quote unquote, to be Jack Perry, and now he's man. He's Jungle Man.
He was doing
Jack
Perry. Some good stuff there when he was playing that character. After he buried the Jungle Boy in the desert,
he did, but it got hung up on its own mythos because it's like, now I'm going to kill you. It's like you're not going to kill him. He's a wrestler.
No, Underground. They needed to go a little further with that. He needed to bring out Anna Jay with him. He needed to be like the Hollywood, like kind of like his dad, like playing like a fictionalized version of his dad.
Oh, that's right. And I pitched Anna Jay with him, didn't I? And they never went through with it. Oh, that would have been so worked. Good. It would have been great.
Yeah. Yeah. But
Hollywood Jack Perry would have worked so well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So it was a good week overall, like between, there wasn't really much bad stuff on the big shows this week.
And that tag match on Raw was really good too with AJ Styles and Dragon Lee.
Oh my God. Yeah. AJ Lee went in the men's tag team titles. It's funny. I made the joke in the Discord and then CM Punk did the same thing on commentary, like about an hour later. So stole my bit. Yeah.
So let's preview Halloween Havoc here real quick. Sure. Six matches on the card. Very interesting one listed here first. Javon Evans and Leon Slater. Javon having a pretty good week on commentary, throwing it to commercial.
Yeah.
How about that?
Actually, I got the commercial stuff too, and he was on one during the commercial. Yeah.
Versus, of all people, Mr. Iguana and his puppet. Good week for puppets, by the way.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. The Mercedes promo with Statlander and Harley. Harley was just fantastic in that.
Camlander.
And La Parka, not L.A. Park, unfortunately. But I believe this
I'll take La Parka.
Son of La Parka. I believe he's going to do all the dancing moves, but it ain't going to be the real La Parka. Evans and Slater win this one, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But this one's fun. Like this. You know, as soon as Iguana came out to answer that challenge, I was like, okay, I'm here. Sign me up.
I'm here. I do enjoy the Mr. Iguana character quite a bit. And I actually do enjoy the Finn Balor puppet, demon puppet versus Iguana puppet.
He cut a good promo, Iguana.
Yes.
Like, I was amazed that his English was as good as it was.
That's
like,
right. I had forgotten all about that promo. But
I mean, it wasn't like a classic promo or anything, but he was, but I mean, he spoke.
I'm not expecting Mr. Iguana to do hard times on the mic.
No, but he didn't need a translator. I mean,
that's true.
Know? Yeah. Yeah.
Although, Asuka had a good week on
the
Asuka mic too.
Oh, Asuka's amazing. No.
And she doesn't speak a lick of English for the most part. So.
Well, except she actually does. So
she does the broken English thing well, though, but she goes back and forth so well.
Yeah.
And
you know
her vibe from the attitude, from the way she presents it. And that's something that I did with wrestlers in the one class I did. It's like, look, just set the tone. Doesn't matter what you say. As long as you get the tone across, people will know what you're saying. Zarya versus Blake Monroe for the NXT Women's North American title.
So I expect Blake is going to win, and that means Zarya lost Soul's title for her, and that's going to create some tension in that group.
Will Soul be in cahoots with Blake Monroe?
No.
Not
well,
yet,
maybe.
At least.
Maybe. That would be interesting, though. Soul Ruka heel turn? I mean, they do like to turn everybody at some point in NXT, so.
Yeah, well, we have to have the breakup of the team. It's too early to do that. I was thinking like a Kevin Nash thing with the knee, because I think the knee is. I haven't heard anything about her knee, and I haven't heard anything about Penelope Ford's elbow. So I don't know if either of those are.
I didn't even know about Penelope Ford. So what? She's gonna there. What is Megan Bain gonna replace? Oh, they're not even in the tag team tournament, are they?
They are
tournament. Maybe that's gonna be the excuse for them to lose.
But she banged her elbow on a moonsault, I believe, on the outside. She was holding her elbow for the rest of the match. I didn't really notice it, but somebody told me it. So
it feels like that Sol Ruka injury is a work, but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, and it's for the story purposes of breaking them up, which is a shame because they're a great team, and we never really got to see them peak as a team to me.
No. Zaruka
is also par for the course. And what's going to be fun, because this promo was also fun, Ethan Page versus El Hijo de Doc Wagner Jr. in a Day of the Dead match for the NXT North American Championship. Who owns the intellectual property rights to Lucha Underground these days?
I don't know. I think it might be AAA. So,
because I could see, say, like a Matanza return. Given that Day of the Dead thing, because I went to one of those Day of the Dead matches. It was Matanza versus the older guy who also just did hardcore matches in Lucha Underground. I can't remember his name right now, but it live. That thing was awesome because they had the entire Day of the Dead carnival. They had guys on stilts and whatnot. They had managers popping out of caskets. I expect this to be a little bit theatrical. In some way.
Do we get a return to him being Messias? That's him, right? Or is that somebody
him.
Else?
That's him. Was it Doc Wagner Jr.? El Hijo
Jr.? I don't know. I'll find out.
I thought it was just Doc Wagner Jr. that was Messias, but maybe I'm wrong on that. Okay, no.
He's El Messias, right?
Yeah.
No, that was Ricky Banderas.
Okay, never mind.
Mil Muertes.
I'm thinking of somebody else. Do you have... It was Mil Muertes. That's who I was thinking. Muertes versus Matanza in the Day of the Dead match. But I expect there's gonna be some sort. There's probably somebody in the audience dressed as a zombie that's gonna attack Doc Wagner Jr. or something. Maybe I don't know. It's gonna be something like that. So we'll see. What do you think?
Yeah, he's only ever been El Hijo del Doctor with Del, okay, Del yeah. Wagner Jr. So,
but I don't see a title change here. I think Paige.
Because it's just for his title, right? It's not for the Latin American title.
Correct.
Okay.
The Broken Hardys are back, Brother Nero and Broken Matt.
Oh, I was so disappointed because after that promo, I thought they were going to do a match at the compound, and then
I think
Matt Hardy went on social media and said no. What?
Well, Vince never liked it. Jeremy is working backstage for NXT, so you would think eventually they could get there if they wanted to. They're facing Dark State in a quote-unquote broken rules match, which I thought meant
that it's at the compound, but apparently not.
I liked Alvarez's idea of it starting in the ring and then going to the compound.
They did that once before wasn't it Orton and Bray Wyatt?
Yes.
Yeah, that was the one where Randy burned his house down.
my joke was Dark State goes into that lake and comes out as either Nexus or Retribution.
Yeah. Or
because there's nothing else for any of those guys other than maybe Dion Lennox as the bookworm to do as a joke.
Well, Nero
as Willow. I mean, WWE people don't know him as Willow. So
no, not at all. Not at all. So, and Matt Hardy, I mean, yeah, he's just broken Matt. Like, I guess he could come out as 2.0,
Yes.
Shannon Moore, does he get a payday? He was just on
ROH. No, he's in Ring of Honor. Yeah. So he's not available for that. Ricky Saints versus Trick Williams. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, who do you have winning? Maybe we see Hurricane. I think Dark State's going to win the belt back.
Oh, I think we definitely see Hurricane. That would probably. Yeah, I think you got to get the belts off of them now.
Because it's only for the TNA belt. It's only for the NXT belts. If it was for both belts, I would say the Hardys. But I think Dark State, we're just doing a reset.
Let me make this one because this will be interesting. Okay, so you have four members of Dark State. Do the Dudleys make an appearance to help the Hardys?
They shouldn't, because they retired.
Retired on TNA.
Yeah, true, true. Is there anybody else that could come out and help?
Edge and Christian.
Yeah, I know. Don't think that one's happening.
No.
What if they did something where it was like dark and you just thought it was Edge and Christian? Like they play the music?
Like you see him from behind or something and it's not them?
No, that would be lame. That would be lame. You know what? Matt's kids are getting pretty big. So, like Maxel's like, he's like a teenager now. And
Who it could be? We could get like some NXT team from long ago. Like, who are the Road Warriors ripoffs?
Oh, the Ascension.
The Ascension.
Connor and Victor. Or maybe
one of them works for TNA, so you could do that, technically.
I don't think they do anymore.
I thought one of them did, didn't they?
You could do you could have the return of Breezango.
Breezango would be a good one.
DIY is always there.
But they just showed up for the reunion. So
yeah. Yeah.
American Alpha shows up, finally does something.
That'd be funny, actually.
I'd take that, to be honest with you. Ricky Saints versus Trick Williams. I don't see
Edgeheads.
Edgeheads. Oh, that's right. Oh, Cardona.
You could have Cardona and Myers go into the river and come out as the Edgeheads.
Oh, there you go. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. If we get it, but I don't think we're getting it necessarily.
No,
but
I don't think so.
I'll take
either,
it. That's strong. Good. And they go, hey, where's Edge and Christian? Don't know. Haven't heard from him in a while.
Yeah.
Ricky Saints and Trick Williams. I don't see a title change because I think Trick's going to be fast-tracked. He's going to be taken off TV and then appear at the Rumble. I think he's getting a couple months vacation.
Yeah, and probably I would align him with Mello again. Just forget the past. Pretend that feud never happened.
Retcon that whole thing, man, because they're a great unit.
Yep.
Unfortunately, they'd get Team Mello, I think was the name of it. But
Trick Mello game.
But then they'd get stuck in the tag team division in SmackDown, which is already
no. Just do like a two-man unit that aren't necessarily a tag team. We can do that.
Well, can they resist that in WWE?
No.
True. And then what I think will probably be the main event.
Triple H can't see them, so.
Oh, God. let's
shout out to Keelan Scott at the wrap.
Yeah. JC Jane and Tatum Paxley. Are we getting two title changes for both women?
I don't think we're going to get a title change, but I think we're getting a really good near fall, like where people think like that she has it.
I've heard a lot of people say Tatum wins and then they start the Tatum Izzy feud, but I think you can do it without Tatum winning the title. I think Izzy ruins Tatum's title shot.
Mm. You could do that false finish and have Izzy be the one that costs her the thing. Like JC's out. 1-2 and Izzy pulls the ref.
That's more likely because I think JC, there's still, I mean, I think this new Fatal Influence has some juice to them. I do. I think they could carry this division for a while.
I think the person that JC should lose to eventually is Jordynne Grace. And I don't know when, but it's that Jordynne should be the one to beat JC. I think
if Jordynne's not getting moved up to the main roster, which would be a shame.
Mm-hmm.
Cause she's already been in the Rumble three times.
Yeah, that's true.
No, I'm not sure just she's quite ready. She's ready. The character's not hot. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Are you telling me Jordynne Grace isn't ready for the main
roster? No, I mean, she's good enough, but what would she, put it this way, you've kind of...
She'd get stuck in the mid card is what she'd be. Yes. She'd be with Julia and...
she'd be in Lyra.
Yeah, Lyra territory, and Lyra's coming. Lyra might be involved in this match too.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, anyway, let's go on to Vader Club then.
Yes.
Terry Funk versus Ric Flair, 1989. I think this might have been the last great clash. I'm trying to think of the list. I remember watching this live.
I did not get the clashes in Canada. So I was getting, we got Mid-South, which was the only way I could watch NWA. Because they would show highlights. So I was following the storyline, but I don't think I ever watched this match before today.
Oh, really? Okay. That's fascinating. What version did you watch? Did you watch the network cleaned up version?
I think so, because okay. I watched, there was two versions. There was one that was posted. It was just some dude and the quality didn't look that great. And then I found a version on the WCW YouTube channel and it was the full pay-per-view. And then or the full clash. And then I just fast forwarded to, like, I watched the promo before and then the match.
Yeah, I've watched enough of this to know, you know, the differences. And the two differences I noticed, and this, I believe, was the most awesome. It's weird because they didn't clean up flares to take out fanfare for the common man before the 2001 theme. But Funk originally came out to harmonica from Once Upon a Time in the West, I believe, on this one. And the mood that it strikes is so awesome to me.
Yeah, because the version they played was just some like cowboy.
It was a Sergio Leone knockoff, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Is what they
it
did.
Fit. But, I mean, it worked for him, and I didn't realize it was dubbed in, so you know that worked.
You get the whole thing where Henry Fonda's character makes its first appearance in Once Upon a Time in the West, which is one of the most awesome villain reveals ever in cinema. But Funk coming out to that is so great. And then at the end, to help Jim Ross from seeming insensitive, they did clean up the commentary on that, because when Dragon Master and Muta attack, it was originally the Orientals are attacking Flair.
Oh, yeah. So here it was the Japanese.
The Japanese
just kept
are
saying
attacking
the Japanese
Flair.
Are attacking. The Japanese. And I thought that sounded weird. Like, because it was like, is Dragon Master even Japanese? Like, he didn't seem Japanese. And Luger's beating on him and he's saying the Japanese. Like,
Luger had... this is to set up one of the great failures in wrestling, but a brave failure because I still love it, which was Starrcade 89 Future Shock.
Yeah, where they had the tournament, right?
Where they had the two round robins. They had the singles round robin. They had the tag team round robin.
So from memory, it was Luger, Muta, Flair, and Sting.
Yes.
And then the Doom, Steiners. who are the other Gordian
you
Williams?
Can get, No. It was originally going to be Doom, Steiners, Road Warriors, and the Skyscrapers.
Right. Yeah.
And then Sid got his lung punctured, and they replaced him with the Head Shrinkers.
Oh, wow. So the original ones, Samu and Fatu?
Yeah.
With Paulie?
They're the Samoan SWAT team here.
Right. But they had Paulie, right?
Yeah, they had Paulie, I believe. Yeah. Or Humperdinck. It might have been Humperdinck. I'm trying to remember.
I think I did get the pay-per-views back then. Like, we didn't get pay-per-view, but I used to rent the videos. So I would wait. I wouldn't get to see the pay-per-views for like 3 months after they happened, but I would get the wrestling magazines, which were almost 3 months behind. So by the time I read the results, you know, I didn't even know what the Observer was. So I wasn't following.
This is the match that was the card where, Muta basically got jobbed out three times. And
I watched it and I like the concept. It just didn't work.
Like I said, it was a bold failure, but I
love this match because it was like it was so old school, and it's like, especially if you watch like the, you know, we just watched the Moxley Darby thing, and it's like this was a wrestling match.
Yes.
That was I don't know what that was on Saturday, but this was like, I mean, they didn't really do anything even close to what Darby and Moxley did to each other, but you believed it.
Right.
And you know, and then, so when Flair put on a figure four and Terry Funk is like trying to get out of it and he won't quit. And then he finally just quits. Like, it meant so much more than Darby just throwing on a Scorpion Deathlock that he's never put on before. And Moxie taps instantly, and it's like, or, you know, screams, I quit, I quit. And then it's over. Like, I don't know. It just, it, even 38 years later or whatever it's been, or 37 years later, 36, it just resonated so much more than what we saw on Saturday, you know, and I'd never seen it. So.
No, I love this match. It felt like a death struggle the entire time. Like, it's so weird that after this, Funk quote unquote retires and he starts doing his Funk's Grill commentary thing, because the end of this match is also what leads to it leads eventually to the Horseman breakup type thing with Sting, where Ole comes back, because this is right before when Ole and Arn get reintroduced to television, because the Brainbusters have left and Tully failed his drug test, and to start doing the Horseman versus that version of, well, no, am I getting my, no, I'm getting my things mixed up, because Funk, no, Funk was the one who was there when the Horseman broke up, so that, all right, I'm getting all it. I'm looking at Gary Hart's autobiography at the same time, because I had meant to look at it, and he's burying Dave for saying that he was holding Muda back from being a Japanese babyface, because the audience, because Hart said it would never work. I love Gordon Solie's two letters, five words, or five letters, two words, I quit. I thought that was a strong part, his only strong part of commentary. I love the sliding across the table spot.
Oh, yeah.
That they set up. The first time I saw that, I go, that's just wacky. And then Funk made that a part of his repertoire from then on. I was just like, wow. Gary Hart, obviously not taking a bump ever. And that's why he was going like he did. He refused to take bumps, and he got mad at Flair in this match for grabbing him and stuff. That was almost legit half the time. But yeah, just the two guys fighting, and then you know you take the mic. Do you want to quit? No. And then I thought Tommy Young was really good in this match too as referee. Always strong, always one of those things. But yeah, and then the post match beatdown, which set everything. Like, I love this heel turn where it's like, because the Funk promo earlier in the show, I don't know if you saw that since you had access to the whole.
No, thing. I just watched the Flair promo.
Okay, in the promo beforehand, Gary Hart says Terry Funk will never quit because it would be insulting to me as well as him.
So they set up thing. They set so up they, what was going to happen
they,
after.
They set up the Gary Hart turn on Funk earlier in that night. And then Muda comes out as just a house of fire with the old, I believe this is the old Kendo Nagasaki or the second one, not the British one, as the Dragon Master.
Oh, okay. So he was Japanese
he was
a Japanese character.
Yeah.
There's two interesting things I noticed. Dave Meltzer gave this 5 stars.
Yes.
So how are you going to feel when Brodito against Takeshita and Okada gets a better match score than this match?
I never think of anything above 5. I really don't.
Okay.
I just go, okay, 5 is his cut. If he thinks 5 is a perfect match, like, the only thing that really sticks in my craw about his ratings these days, other than his great inflation for AEW and Japanese matches, is the fact that he gave that first Sasha Bailey match 4.75.
Yeah. Well, and even Bailey, or not Bailey, Bianca and Io from Backlash Puerto Rico, that one was 5 stars to me, and he didn't give it 5. I was
right.
The other thing was, do you know when the next time we would see Terry Funk in WCW/NWA and who he wrestled?
I believe it was Slamboree versus Tully, right?
Correct. And Tully was the other guy that had the famous I quit.
And this is what happened there was Funk was a broadcaster for a while, and he would do things with Chris Cruz as well, which was a very underrated team. And then he went to Philadelphia to start doing shots for Eddie Gilbert and whatnot during that. And that's where they go, hey, would you like to come in and do Slamboree this time?
Yeah, well, he had done the whole ECW run. Like he had the he was the ECW champion. He beat Shane Douglas a couple months before
in 94.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he won it again later.
Yeah,
he,
I'm trying to remember when Eastern became Extreme, because I know he was there.
Oh,
for
it
a might lot
have still been Eastern,
run.
But right. It was ECW.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because it was just at a house show. He beat. Oh, sorry. You know what? No, I'm wrong. He beat him by DQ, so he didn't win the title. My bad.
Right.
My bad.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. And then he came in. Yeah. Tully agreed to do basically a draw, because Tully was still getting strung along, because they had kept offering him contracts and then yanking them or underselling them, and then he decided he wasn't going to put up with this. So he no-showed that Flair for the Gold, which was touted as a Horseman reunion, and they explained it away by, oh, Barry got to him, because Barry and Flair were feuding at the time. Just broke my heart, because I bought it for the purpose of seeing Tully Blanchard on that one. But I enjoyed the Tully Funk match is really enjoyable too on Slamboree. It's nothing great.
Yeah. No, I that one I watched because we had WCW by that point, and
right.
For an old time match at the time, I mean, they weren't really that old. That's the thing, like especially compared to now, like they're it's like Flair and Cody, you know, or I mean Orton and Cody or something, you know, like pretty much the same age. I think.
And Funk just then decided to overhaul his entire style and become that hardcore legend, and it's just amazing. Tully shows up on that ECW in Florida tapings.
Did the 1 hour match with Shane Douglas?
Well, after that, but that was like it. Like he looked like a balding tennis pro attacking Benoit Malenko, I believe. At
well,
the
I
time.
Mean, he looked every bit of 60, even though I think he was like maybe 41.
Oh no, yeah, if that. I mean, he might have been just 39 at the time, but. Yeah, that was a fun journey. Rob will be back next week. Get your plugs in, sir, because I got a lot of them.
All right. Well, I've got I do a show with Garrett Gonzalez of Wrestling Observer Radio. Actually, I think I'm going to be on with Garrett and Dave on Saturday, recapping the UFC show. So that's on Wrestling Observer Radio on the F4W network. And then Garrett and I will be back on the Fight Game Media Network on Monday doing the Takedown. And then you and I will be doing a show on two shows back to back. So I'm doing three nights in a row. Tuesday, we're going to be recapping the Dynamite from, I've got it here because I got Tully Blanchard saying March 3rd, 2021, the Crossroads, and it was the debut of Shaq, and. You know what this actually was too? This was the very first Dynamite show Parker and I did. Parker Klein and I recapped this show March 3rd, 2021. It was in the lead up to Revolution that year. And Tully Blanchard returned to the ring in addition to Shaq returning to the ring. Interesting bit of trivia. Shaq and Tully Blanchard both had their very last match on the same day on the same show. hear these facts everywhere. So yeah, that we'll be recapping that show, and then we'll be back for the Dynamite show on the Fight Game Media Network a week from yesterday.
Fight Game also roped me in. I'm doing a show Sunday night, presumably after Halloween Havoc and after their recap. I'm doing Halloween Havoc 1993 with John LaRocca and Garrett. He's doing his background research now. Here's how I'll describe it: great wrestling, crappy finishes. That thing was interesting.
That's WCW in the early 90s.
Main event, Vader versus Cactus Jack.
That's a Vader Club match right there.
I think we did it for Vader Club, to be honest with you. But you can follow me at Crap Game 13 on X. And yes, I do the Dynamite show with one Paul Ace Fontaine. About 20 minutes after Dynamite goes off the air, he and I go live on YouTube, drops into your podcast catchers for free. Rob McCarron will be next week. Thank you for your time. Goodbye.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling podcasting network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back. Myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network.